I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This week, my special guest is sound designer Nicola Becker, who won an Oscar for his brilliant work on Sound of Metal. I interviewed Nicola a month or so ago, having just watched John and the Hole, a terrific psychological chiller, which is now available on streaming services. We did the interview by remote, and appropriately enough for a sound designer, Nicola's location was full of strange noises. Think of them as sound effects. So let me begin by saying I have just in the last couple of days watched John and the Hole, which you did the sound design for, which I thought was a fascinating film, very, very sort of strange and creepy and satirical. And I was very struck by how much of John's world we learn about from the sound. A lot of the film, there are just images when you don't see anything beyond the outside of his face, but you hear the sound of the drone or the sound of sounds maybe insects or the sound. Can you tell me a little bit about working on that film?
It was very specific because it was exactly during the pandemic. So it was the first time I had to work on a film without to meet the director in person and to work in a kind of very remote situation. So it was very special because it's never happened before, and to really try to go in and to deep in the body of a film like that was very, very special. There is something from the start we thought about. It's also to have this kind, to create a kind of very weird aspect of the forest. So from the start, I was thinking about Alvin Lüscher's. You know, there is this famous piece called Vespers.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, using like very weird beatings. And so I said to myself it would be very interesting to actually use this kind of structure. And then after also we thought about Mariana Masher, you know, the work she did with Otto Emission. And so I have a friend which is Guillaume Malaret, which is a noise musician, and he really worked with Otto Emission with insect sound.
Yeah.
So I asked him if he could provide to me some tracks, you know. So we record some insect together. I give him some tracks, insect tracks I have, and also like drones recording, and he creates some kind of auto emission. So it's very subtle because you can't really put it too loud, but I think it creates something like a bit strange which for me was interesting because this young kid is a bit like, you said derange, or like he's a bit like, he's a weirdo, you know. And as for me, it was interesting to try to create this kind of creepy aspect, but to do it in a very subtle way.
I thought what worked really well was that we meet this character. He's a 13-year-old. He seems isolated, and then he discovers a hole, a bunker. And then he puts his family in it because he wants to know what it feels like to be an adult. And the film has got a very deadpan quality to it. But you feel that through the sound design, you're hearing the world in his head, slightly alienated, particularly that thing you say about the drones and the insects. You don't know what's mechanical and what's organic. I thought that was a really good way of getting into his character.
And also how you call that... You know this small machine you use to put
water. Drone.
To put water on the garden. You know, like this.
Sprinkler. Yeah.
Sprinkler also. So the idea also was to, because I think what is very interesting with this film that all the structure of the scenario is based on the fact that you never know. You know, you never know that what's happening totally. You know, it's, you always question what's happening in the film. Yeah. You know, and I think so. I try to do something very similar with the sound. You know, to always try to put the position to put the audience in the position where they have to question what they hear and what it is and not be sure about it and it's something weird, but no, maybe not. You know, like so. I think it was but. It was not so easy because I did that in a, they had like a super tiny budget, so I did that in 2 or 3 weeks, you know.
Wow.
So, but you know, I it's exactly the kind of film I like to work with, and with the director we became a very good friend, and we know that we're gonna work on his next project, which is funny because it's also he's working also with the scriptwriter of Inarritu. And I'm starting also the film of Alejandro now, so it's a kind of logical link, you know, for me.
Last month, John asked me something. It's a weird question. He wanted to know what it's like to be an adult.
Can you please stop?
When do you stop being a kid? I didn't know what to tell him. I don't think he liked that.
Can you tell your mother I'm here?
No, she left.
This is your life, John. This is what you want to do. This could be who you are.
Hi, this is Anna.
I'm sorry.
When you were doing the sound design, did you know anything about the music? Because I didn't know Caterina Barbieri's music before I heard the film. And as soon as I heard it, I went to Spotify and downloaded a bunch of her stuff. And the way that kind of cyclical, repeating, sequenced sounds that she used, again, works very, very well with the interior of the character. Did you know that as you were doing the sound design, or did you hear that afterwards?
No, I knew her work, you know, that the people like her or Alessandro Cortini, you know, there are people which are for me very interesting, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think that, of course, there is in the modular synthesizer, there is something which is also very interesting because there is a kind of organic aspect which is also for me, which is very interesting to mix with field recordings,
yeah.
You know, and also that's also why I'm also working. There is some piece in but very, very subtle piece also in John and the Hole where I use this very weird instrument called the Bache structures, which are like very strange acoustic instrument, not temperated, built in the 50s by two French guys who have influenced a lot Schaeffer, you know, Pierre Schaeffer?
Yeah.
And so which are creating this kind of very strange acoustic drone or like synth sound. So I think the idea was that the same instrument I use also on Sound of Metal, you know. So I really like this instrument because they are like a pure tone or like I would say abstract tone, a bit like you can do with modular synth, but in the acoustic domain. So it's very interesting because it can really, it's melting very well with all the field recordings, the Atmos, you know, and the production sound. So it's permit also to actually move, you know, to have a kind of in between, you know, in between the production sound. You have this layer, which is more like acoustic drones. Then you move to synth, you know, and I really like to work with this, all this element.
Did you start out, was your interest in sound musical first? Did you start out playing before you started experimenting with sound design?
No, it's totally the opposite. I come from performance because I was a Foley artist for many years. So the idea of performance also a link is a very strong link with a musician, you know. Okay. So I think I always understood, you know, the idea of to perform music and to play music, even if I was never a musician. So for me, when I moved from Foley to sound designs and sound design to music, it was also to come back to a must make me more simple gesture, you know, where I can also perform and most of the time, that's why I like field recordings. That's why I like Foley. That's why I like playing with this musical instrument, because I like to be physically involved in the process of doing sound. Because for me, there is a very important aspect between to be involved physically in the production of sound or in recording sound. For me, I'm not able to work with a library sound, you know?
Okay.
Because everything is based on my own memory of these recordings, all these sessions, you know, Foley session, field recording session, being on the shoot, you know? And hear the voice of the actors with my own ears, you know, that I want to create this kind of body of sound memory and work from that.
So Nicola, how did that begin for you? I mean, I have a vision of you as a child with a tape recorder recording sounds.
In fact, it's not far from that, but I would say that my first very strong relation was with nature, you know, because I had the chance to have parents which were teachers, and they were we had a lot of holidays all together, and they were we didn't have so much money, so we used to spend a lot of time in nature, you know, camping, like I don't know how you call it, like free camping or you know. And so I think my first relation is really a strong relation with nature, but also with the mountain, with water, with kayak, I feel I'm very connected to nature, you know, and so I think and it's very important for me still, you know, very important. The other aspect was also sport, because I was doing a lot of sport, and so the idea of performing something was very important. I kind of miss the idea of learning an instrument, because I was not good at that when I was a kid. But the first thing is, like, when I was 13 years old, I saw a small documentary on TV where I could they were showing how to make sound in a film. So it was like just one single shot of a boat lying on the beach. And they were showing the same shot, but with like a seagull sound, and then after with kids sound, and then after with waves, and then after with music. And I remember this moment if it was yesterday, if it's yesterday, you know, like it's still super clear. And I was 13, so I didn't say like, okay, that's all the element I need, you know, but something happened, you know, and from this moment I didn't have so much money, but I started to do like working on the weekend, you know, to buy a turntable and buy mostly like vinyl from Orange, Clock Orange or Le Petit Prince like what you would say now, like podcast or radio things or film music, you know. And I was listening that all night, you know, like, and so and then after when I start to I think I was 15, and I was always speaking about that, you know, that I want to do sound for film. And one person said, like, you know, I'm working with on a film, and next week I'm gonna go in a Foley session. And so I went. I had a chance to go to a Foley session, and I was 15, and then I. you know the guy, you know, was doing like horses with coconuts, you know, like fight, yeah. And I was like, okay, you know, this is obvious. So then after 2 years after I finished school, I start like to study mathematics, and I understood that it was not my thing, and I found a job as a runner in a studio, for the studio. And so I start to work as a kind of assistant or runner in the studio. And then after I've been fired after 6 months because the guy saying that I had no future in this world. because I was asking too much questions, you know. And then slowly I start to, you know, to do some Foley for some small short film. And so on, you know, and then after, later I had the chance to, as a Foley artist, to work on a film called La Haine from Mathieu Kassovitz. Yeah. And it really helped me because it was a kind of very special film, you know, and bringing a kind of new wave, nouvelle vague, new wave, you know.
Yeah.
Like of young director try to be inspired more than by American film, independent film, or more by, I would say, maybe Asiatic film, you know, like all the generation, like Gaspar Noé, Mathieu Kassovitz, Yann Kounen, Nicolas Boukriev, Christophe Gans, all this generation of directors, and so I had the chance to actually meet all of them and to work for all of them. And then after I had the chance, as a Foley artist, to start to work with Polanski, it was on the Ninth Gate. Mm-hmm. And then on a film which was like a kind of psychedelic western called Blueberry, I start to meet Andy Kennedy, who is still a friend now. He is a great English sound designer.
Yeah.
And he tried to say like, oh, it's interesting what you do, because I was very curious, and also I really spent a lot of time in music studio and realized that they're doing so much interesting thing in music studio. Using so much different mic, using so much different preamp, have so much amazing technique, and I start to think that it might be interesting to actually use this technique to the Foley techniques. You know, bring a lot of knowledge from music to Foley recordings, and then of course at one moment when you start to enjoy to play with all this microphone, you say like, oh, it would be nice to go out, you know. So I start to do some field recording, and then I discover from music Decatree, and I was thinking, oh, why we are always recording AB, you know, like maybe I should try to start to record, with Decatree, with Omnidirection, you know, and so on and so on. So I was always trying to, and then of course when you spend time in the studio also, you meet musician. And you're like, oh, maybe it would be interesting to actually not recording an object or Atmos, but also maybe instrument.
Yeah.
You know, so I think everything became was very natural in a way.
Nicola, I very much hope that when you won the Oscar, you got back in touch with whoever it was that fired you and told you you didn't have a future in it and sent them a photograph of the statue.
Yeah, no, but he's a nice old man now. But I think he was from another. He had another perspective on the work, you know.
Yeah.
But okay. But he actually helped. I learned a lot with him, you know, even if it was short.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today. Tell me about, I mean, Sound of Metal was such an acclaimed hit and an extraordinary piece of work. From your point of view, that must have been a really fascinating project to work on, since the sound is the plot and the central character of the film.
So, of course, when you... It's a bit like, maybe I said that in all the interview, but it's really, for me, I was the first thing I'm thinking about, you know, if you are a costume designer and people call you and say, like, it's a film about the wedding of the Queen Elizabeth, you know. It's like, you know that everybody is going to look at the dress, you know, it's going to be like, so it's an opportunity you don't have to fail. You have to be consistent.
Yes.
You know. So of course, I think Darius didn't ask me that by chance, total chance, because he knew about my work already, but through different people, because also I'm working with a lot of artists, conceptual artists. So we knew each other through Thomas Bartlett, which is a great pianist living in New York, working with Nico Muli and Yoko Ono and a lot of interesting people. Arto Lindsay also, I mean, and so he said, Darius wanted to have someone which were maybe not like a pure... maybe a pure product from the Hollywood machinery, you know, someone who have also a bit more experience in different things, like a bit in music, a bit like in documentary, a bit. And I think it's very interesting because for me, Laen, you know, Mathieu Kassovitz, is a bit mirroring Sound of Metal in the way that I think Mathieu Kassovitz was very inspired by American film, independent film, and in a way, I think Darius is a bit the opposite. He's very inspired by European, you know, like maybe the Darden Brothers, or you know, like this aspect of the European. Cinema, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit for me. And I think it's the two most important film of my life, you know. Also, so the first one as a photo artist, and the second one as a sound designer and composer. And so, of course, when Darius called me and sent me the script, I was like, "Yes, this is something serious, you know." So we have to be consistent with this kind of film. And I never thought about the Oscar because it have never been in my. In 31 years, I think I've been like two or three times in Cannes, you know, in the Festival of Cannes, or you know. So I'm. That's not an aspect of the filmmaking which is very interesting for me. So I, when I'm doing a film, I never think about the potential economy or the potential career of the film. You know, what is important for me, it's if the film contains something which I think I can work with, and if the director we find a way to, you know, we have a project together, or, you know, things like that. So, even if Darius told me, like, very, very, very soon in the process, you know, maybe this film will have a, you know, if you do that well, maybe people will see that, you know, hear that, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like, it's the film, the project, Darius is amazing, you know, it's his first film. Yeah. And it's totally incredible to be able to achieve such a technical project, you know, because it's very complicated. What was amazing that we actually start to meet like 1 year before the shoot, and we start to try to understand what we could do, the language we could build, the first vocabulary we could use, you know. And so, but the first time he came in Paris, I bring him in an echoic chamber, you know. So there is a place in Paris called IRCAM, which had been built by Pierre Boulez in the 70s. And I say, you know, we have to start by an experience, you know, a physical experience.
Yeah.
So I bring him in that place. I close the light, I close the door, and he stayed for maybe 20 minutes in that. And I said to him, okay, now we can talk. because I think sound is very, I mean, like, sound can be illustrative, sounds can be interesting in many different ways, but I think for me sound is a first physical experience, you know.
Yeah.
And I wanted to start with this, you know, and I think because all the idea of the script or the scenario was based also on this idea of this trajectory of this character who have to change. It's changed totally his way the way he's experienced the world, you know. And it was very important to be able to share that with the audience, you know, but in a very simple way, you know. So we did the first part, like, which is about the death part, in a very, very simple way, very naturalistic, in fact. You know, it was very like, okay, when the tympani are not working, So we still get vibration through the bones and the tissue. So let's put microphone, you know, in like stethoscope in the body and see what's happening, you know, and try to understand how we receive a sound in a different way, you know, through the body, you know. So actually the first part is very like that, you know, very simple in a way that it's, and I think it's working because also everybody experiences that when you speak, you know. When I speak, I feel my body vibrate. You know, my body is vibrating.
I,
you know, when you are before to be born, you know, it's also a very strong experience. You have to be immersed in the liquid and in contact with the structure of your mother, you know, the bone structure of your, you know, so that's something I think we keep in mind, which is super important. When we sleep, I think, and it's very silent, I think I'm sure we hear also our internal sounds, the heartbeats, you know, the breathing, you know, so I think that I said, like, in my mind, I said, like, we have to make it very simple, but well done, like. And so the sound are extremely simple, but actually the arc of the way it's used is very subtle, you know. And we actually spend a lot of time with the picture editor to work together, you know, in a very collaborative way to say, like, okay, it's simple, but it has to be really well done, you know. We spend a lot of time to try many different sound editing and picture editing, you know, to find the best combination. So he was super open to change his picture, the picture editing according to the sound, you know, which is super rare. So I think it was that's the That was for me amazing. It's really like the first time it happened at such a level of collaboration, you know.
Yeah.
And then for the second part, which is more like the cochlear implant, it was totally the opposite. We thought with the director that actually nobody experienced that. So we can't propose to the audience a sound which in culturally no, you know, like distortion or like electric distortion or like a reverb or you know something, I don't know, but like phasing or whatever. So we need to find something which is very, very specific. So I because I'm working also with Zircam, they have developed some technologies. They are not really still at this time they were starting to use it, but they were not functioning very well. And so I said like, oh guys, you know, it can be actually super interesting to use your kind of granular technology, which is not working very well, because it can actually bring new texture of sound. And so the idea was to actually use naturalistic sound, but put them in this kind of weird process, you know?
Yeah.
And not trying to be like, because what was important is to still feel the organic aspect of the voice, of the sound of the city, you know, but through this very strange filter, you know, and avoiding a kind of robotic voice or you know, like something which we like a vocoder or something like an harmonizer, you know, really try to propose something a bit different. And also, of course, it was very well documented, because we spoke with audiologists, we spoke with people who have implants. Audiologists made some model of that, so we knew that it would be very important to be not far from that. And actually, a lot of people who have implant or one implant, you know, send me messages and say like, "This is, you know, this is really far, not far. This is very close from what I experienced, you know." And for me, it was very interesting, because I did several screenings with deaf. Deaf community, you know, like, and most of them, they said like, okay, we have seen they knew the film like by heart, because they have seen like 5, 6, 7 times, because for them it was like the first film where actually they can share with people from their family or friends, you know, for them to understand and to experience that, you know. So I never thought about that, but it was really beautiful to see that this film also was very useful for the deaf community to share his experience, you know, and for the people to really understand in which world they live, you know.
You said at the beginning of that like if you're a costume designer and somebody says we're going to do a period piece, that you then know that, you know, you're in the spotlight and you know you can't put a foot wrong. I have spoken to a couple of sound designers who've said that the job is done best when nobody notices, and that almost in a way, as soon as people start to notice it, are you aware of that as an issue? Because it, I think one of the things that it does mean is that critics, for example, often find it hard to know how to talk about sound design, because for a lot of the time they don't even notice that it is sound design.
But I think in this film particularly, it's obvious that we have the right to make it a bit bigger, you know, because it makes sense. I'm also yesterday I was finishing a film from an artist called Philippe Pareno, and it was a kind of a recreation of the house where Goya did paint his black paintings, mm-hmm. La Quinta del Sordo, and he was supposed to be deaf at this time. So we tried to recreate the death perspective of Goya in between, I think it was 1823 and 1827, and we kind of did a kind of archaeosonic archaeology, you know. So we actually recreate all the world in that period with the right distance of the bells, which, you know, work people were doing, you know. And I ask a very interesting sound engineer, which is coming from music. I met him with on a project with a musician called Arca, and I found that he was super interesting. And so since like two or three projects for this artist, I'm working with him, and he don't use to work with picture, you know. My you know, so when he start to work, he's really doing very interesting musical mix, you know.
Yeah.
But then you feel that he forgot about the picture, you know. So my work is always to say, like, you know, forget about that, you know. It's like you're working with sound, but it's not about the sound, it's about how the sound is affecting the picture, you know.
Yeah.
And that's because when I was 13 years old and I saw this small documentary about how you make film, what I understood that actually it's the fact that when you change of sound, you actually change the way you perceive the picture, you know?
Yeah, and, yeah, absolutely.
And so what is interesting for me, and that's why I still like this work after 30 years, is because I never know how my brain will combine visual information and sonic information.
Yeah.
And that's still a mystery, you know? So that's why also sometimes when I start a film, I spend a lot of time to actually put sounds in the picture and try to see what's happening, you know,
because
I have no idea in a way, you know. So for me, a new film is always like a blank page, you know. It's something like I need to start from scratch because I don't know how actually, you know, how it's going to work, you know. And so, of course, you need to create these things where you don't actually say like, for me, if the people say like, the sound was wonderful, it means that or the film was really bad, or the or the sound was bad, you know. So. But in a way, you know. But of course, in Sound of Metal, you have the right to say the sound is great because it's the topic of the film.
Yeah. Let me just ask you a couple of final things. What's your favorite film of all time?
2001, and maybe Stalker, and Ocho y Media, you know.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you go for 2001 and Stalker because you know that's they're a nice pair together.
No, I would say that from the start, what was interesting for me, it was not about the actor. It was about spending time with the director.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel much more close from all the kind of visionary directors. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And let me ask you finally, when do you? I take it you go to the cinema. Yeah. You still go to see films in the cinema.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you ever choose the cinema because you know that it's got a good sound system? And does it annoy you if you go and see a cinema and the sound isn't good?
No, I would say it's the opposite, in a way. Because I think if I go, I mean, if the film is not amazing and I'm in a very good place, I'm going to start to analyze everything. You know, I'm going to say, okay, they did that, so, you know. So, even at home, I have a small radio, and I have I think it's the opposite, you know, because it would be too obsessional. You know, I'm already working 12 hours a day on films or music, you know, So if you know, it's a way for me to kind of have, put a distance, you know.
Yeah. So when you're not working, do you prefer silence?
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer silence in a way that. I think that it's more interesting actually to read and to get ideas from different like to go from architecture, painting. You know, I think it's more interesting to actually get emotion and feeling from other art, you know, and trying to bring that in the sound domains and to try to, you know, like there's people I think that they mostly work from the history of the sound in filmmaking, you know, and I really try to avoid that. So my idea is to really try from reality, you know, because I think we know that from neurologists now that actually imagination is coming from reality. So for me to still be in contact with reality is very important. The way I think, if you put yourself only in the world of filmmaking, you start to lose imagination. And also, I think I like to also read books. Mostly reading. Yeah.
Well, Nicola, it's been great speaking to you. I have to say that after this conversation, I am going to go and walk in the woods.
Exactly.
Without any headphones, and I'm just going to have a little bit of time with natural sound around me. Thanks ever so much. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you, and I hope that our paths cross physically at some point. But
sure.
Thanks ever so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much. It was very nice. Bye-bye.
Well, there we are. I hope you enjoyed that interview with sound designer Nicola Becker. If you've enjoyed this podcast, remember to subscribe and tell your friends. And why not visit our Patreon page, which has got loads and loads of video extras. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Keep watching the skies.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.